Well, hello everyone. This week I've been looking at theorists of crowds, mass communication, propaganda, and who better to turn to next than Edward Bernays, the father of public relations, as he is known. He literally wrote the book on propaganda, quite literally. And if you're unfamiliar with him, you should really get familiar with him, and this video is going to help you. Edward Bernays informs a lot of my thinking in populist illusion and in applied elite theory. Like some of the other thinkers we've looked at this week, he does not have dedicated chapters on him, but he crops up again and again because whether he knew it or not, he had internalized the basic ideas of elite theory, much like Walter Lippmann, and helped kind of inform some, intelligent readers of it. However, unlike some of the other thinkers we've looked at, Bernays is a little bit different because he was actually a practitioner of the arts, or some might say dark arts, that he wrote about, namely the art of persuasion, mass messaging, propaganda, public relations. So a lot of you will have heard the phrase engineering consent or manufacturing consent, which was the name of the Noam Chomsky book. Bernays argues that in complex modern democracies, public opinion cannot simply be left to chance. Bernays says that the engineering of consent is a necessity. Using scientific methods drawn from psychology and social sciences, leaders and organizations must actively shape what the public thinks, wants, supports. And in Bernays, this goes further than simply kind of changing people's minds or even their beliefs. He wants to go beyond that again and to change the entire incentive structure. He talks about writing people's dreams for them. That, you know, you want your messaging to be so aspirational that it is on the level of a dream. And Bernays, in some ways, had appointed himself a dream weaver, a weaver of people's dreams. Now, this is really, I mean, on the one hand, it's dark and manipulative. On the other hand, it's absolutely fascinating. He says, look, if you want to sell, for example, a new item of clothing or a new type of hat, you don't sell the hat. You don't sell the item of clothing. You sell the dream attached to the thing. And if people are resistant, that is not actually a barrier. What you need to do is, using mass psychology, using the tools of mass media to your advantage, you simply reorient the entirety of society towards really, really wanting your hat, or really, really wanting your coat. That was a Freudian slip, because I was thinking in my mind of Coca-Cola. Who, I mean, you talk about rewiring people's dreams, Santa Claus, Christmas, it's the real thing. I mean, Coca-Cola have been masters of the dark arts for a very, very long time. And lo and behold, that's why everybody now drinks Coca-Cola. But they didn't do it simply by trying to sell the kind of sugary brown liquid. But literally selling a dream, an entire lifestyle, an entire way of thinking and being through their product. And this is the ultimate Bernaysian engineering of consent. It is not simply intellectual. It is not simply emotional. It's even above that and beyond that. Bernays talks about invisible government. If you read propaganda, he quite literally talks about invisible dictators that are secretly behind many of your everyday purchasing decisions, your consumer choices, things that you think you are choosing freely, are in fact being dictated for you by these invisible dictators. For example, you might have an idea that you'd like to go to the opera. Have you seen the latest opera on in London or New York? Well, Bernays are saying, well, does anybody really want to go and see the opera? Or is it the idea, the dream that the opera represents? Is it the status that is attached to it? People in high society go to the opera. This is what he means about weaving dreams. Pretty much anything that you can think of, Bernays says, has an invisible dictator behind it. You know, in the world of fashion, it's the people who design the clothes. It's the advertising men who come up with those dreams that we were talking about. Even in the world of politics, there are people who weave the dreams of what it is, the positive visions that you want to see. Get behind this party and we'll literally give you the country that you want. Don't vote for these people or it will, your nightmares will become true, etc., etc., etc. Even though this sounds conspiratorial, using phrases like invisible dictators, when you start thinking about what Bernays is saying, obviously it's true. Obviously, it is true that lots of the everyday choices that you make have in fact been primed and anchored using mass psychological techniques. And this could be as simple as you're driving home one day and you see the advertising billboard of McDonald's. It implants that idea. Oh, I haven't had McDonald's in a while. It plants that idea in your head. Even me saying this now could plant that idea in your head. And then maybe next time you're driving home, instead of going straight home, you might weave to the McDonald's. The suggestion has already been planted in there. Now you say to yourself, I made this choice of my own free will. I am having this because I like the hamburger. I drink this because I like the Coca-Cola. But in fact, even the desire, the need to want it was implanted there by an invisible dictator. So Bernays would argue. And where Bernays is dark is that he's like, not only is this a good thing, but I shall be that invisible dictator and you can hire me. This is a service that I provide. He argues that the masses are fundamentally irrational. His uncle was Sigmund Freud. So he had some psychological insight, you might say. Bernays believed that people respond far more reliably to emotional, symbolic, and subconscious appeals than to rational argumentation or facts. And you can see where there's such overlap here with Gustave Le Bon, who I talked about on Monday, and with Walter Lippmann, who I talked about yesterday. Every single week, I'm doing these kind of themed suites of thinkers who, you know, took these ideas and really analyzed them and thought about them quite a lot. He said, understanding the group mind through psychology rather than through things like logic is the true key of effective persuasion. And again, what many people shudder about with Bernays is that he is spotting all of these things and he's not saying, oh, this is a bad thing, this is a bad fact of humanity. He's saying, here's this information. This is what people are like. How can we use this to our advantage? How can we, the invisible dictators, use this to our advantage? And if you would like to be that, you can hire me for a very large sum of money. And this is ultimately what Bernays did in his life. He says propaganda is not sinister. It is simply organized. Bernays strips propaganda of its negative connotations. In fact, it acquired negative connotations after a decade or so of Bernays publishing this book, Propaganda, because as people started to talk about it, a lot of people were like, hold on, this is really quite dark. This mass psychology, this mass manipulation. Of course, the experience of the Second World War, not only did the Allies have a lot of propaganda, but some of the enemies had propaganda. In the Cold War, the Soviet enemy, in that case, had their own propaganda. And so people became used to thinking about these controls of mass communication and mass brainwashing. I would say a huge figure in making people think of propaganda as a bad thing was probably George Orwell and his much quoted novel, 1984, as well as Animal Farm. But in the 1920s, propaganda was a neutral term as used by Benet. It's only picked up negative connotations later on. Anyway, for him, propaganda is simply the organized effort to spread a particular doctrine or practice, a neutral technology that was inevitable in large-scale societies. He insisted that those who wield propaganda and to what end should keep moral questions in mind. Although when you start thinking about some of the things that Bernays actually did in his career, that morality starts to look quite questionable. Famously, he was the person who got women to smoke. I'll talk about that campaign in a second. You know, he reframed cigarette smoking as being, he called them liberty sticks. You know, this was a declaration of American freedom, the ideology of freedom in smoking the cigarette, as opposed to, a health hazard or anything else. So for Benet, propaganda is an executive arm of the invisible government, the invisible government being all those invisible dictators who actually are behind your dreams, hopes, decisions, consumer choices, etc., etc., etc. Persuasion, said Benet, is at the heart of democracy. That is, in a mass democracy, leaders cannot simply govern by decree. They must build public support for policies and decisions. Okay, this means, according to Benet's argumentation, that it is legitimate for leaders to try to manufacture consent for things they want to do, not sinister, because persuasion is part and parcel of what democracy is all about. Organized persuasion is central to democracy functioning at all, says Benet. So he was actually justifying these arts as a core part of what democracy is. And unlike many of the other thinkers that we have looked at, he was not an anti-democrat. He was actually pro-democratic, which makes him... there's been a couple of others who, were at least had some positive things to say about democracy. For Benet, it was actually the best system. Partly because it justified his entire livelihood, but also because, he, in fairness to him, was probably thinking of some of the other totalitarian systems that we'd seen and how that was not particularly good for him. And so for him, this was a legitimate operation. And the professional duty of the leaders to engineer consent becomes a civic responsibility for those who understand how the public mind works. Now, this is the same thinking behind things like the modern day nudge unit. Okay, and still there's this debate as to whether this is legitimate or sinister. Many people find the nudge unit a particularly sinister way of manufacturing consent. You know, everybody will have seen tragedies that occur, terrorist attacks or crimes of that nature, violent murders. And, in this country and in America and across the West, a little member of the nudge unit comes in, whispers in the, ear of the parents, let's say, of a child who's been murdered. And, they've already written the script. This shall not divide us. It's not what the person would have wanted, et cetera, et cetera. And from the point of view of governance, you can understand why this is done. They don't want public anger to be too widespread, that it threatens social cohesion and public order. Okay, but again, we're crossing these kind of moral questions. Should the government be whispering in the ear of somebody who's emotionally distraught, having just lost their child in a savage murder? Benet would say absolutely yes. Some of his detractors would question that. Now, because as we saw in Walter Lippmann, the public is a phantom and public opinion does not exist per se. It needs to be created for them by the weavers of dreams, by the invisible dictators. So beyond simply informing the public, as Walter Lippmann wanted, Benes went a step further and said, well, look, we need to actually form public opinion. We need to, he wrote a whole book called Crystallizing Public Opinion. Public opinion is not just what people, you know, you don't go up to people in the street and ask them what they think. They don't know what they think. They need to be told. We need to implant that idea in their heads. And this is a very different way of thinking from most people ever in history, I would say. You know, for a lot of people, you know, if informed, like, let's say there's some policy that you want, right? Some policy that you want. And the feedback comes back, well, look, sir, we can't do that because most people are against it. People don't want this. Edward, what are we going to do? People don't want this. They're against your idea. It's just not possible. Public opinion's not there. Benet says, listen, look, give me a year. Give me 6 months. The public don't know what they want to think. Their dreams shall be altered. We are the weavers of dreams. They shall be, in effect, told what they think. They don't know what they think already. All great ideas ever came from a small group of people. Their minds shall be changed. We'll simply change public opinion. You see how this works? So he did not, like, let's say, I mean, anything you can think of, any change that's happened, when things start out, most people are against it. Most people don't want to see that change. The consent has to be manufactured for it. But also people like Benes were saying, well, look, we need to, like, in effect, create the reality we want to see. And I've been through exactly how this sort of process worked in the past. So, for example, I've got a video on the channel looking at jazz, looking at the history of jazz and how the American public in the 1910s really didn't want jazz. High society didn't want jazz. Now, this wasn't Benes himself, but it's the same principle. But that didn't stop the people who wanted jazz to take off. It didn't stop the people who loved jazz. It didn't stop the people who said, well, look, we simply will change. We'll change the incentive structure. We'll change the dreams. Okay, jazz is seen as low class. We'll make it high class. Those same clubs that, you know, currently are booking Beethoven concerts and classical music and opera, we'll stick jazz in those venues. That will make people want it. And the same guy who a year ago swore blind that he hated jazz, now he'll say that he loves jazz because we have changed the underlying dream structure. We have created his dreams for him, and he will follow because he's a member of the public. Public opinion does not exist. We create it. This way of thinking, this Benesian way of thinking, is so alien to most normal people that it's a little bit shocking when you first come into contact with it. And yet, it is not all bad. It's not all bad because some aspect of what he's saying absolutely is true. How do you create change in the world in a mass society? To some extent, these sorts of methods must be employed. If you want to create, you know, it's not only enough to be the change you want to see, you also have to, like, bring lots and lots of other people on side. How do you do that? Well, they're not going to listen to rational argumentation. They're not going to listen really to, you know, if you stand up there with a list of pros and cons, it's not going to do it. You need to rewire their entire incentive structure and dreams. And this is really what PR is all about. The PR professional must actively create public policy as relevant and important to their own lives. The audience is not found, it is built. The audience isn't going to come just on its own. It's not like build. He's not saying build it and they will come. He's saying you must kind of reorient everything towards the fact that people want this, and so they will want it. Very interesting. Now, I will get on to some of his further ideas. He's got ideas about polling. He's got ideas about lots of things, lots of which, again, tread this kind of morally gray area. But I've always found it fascinating. But as the heat expands here, I don't know why I'm wearing this hot woolly tweed jacket today, because it's absolutely boiling. That reminds me of my summer sale. It is promo code Scorcher. I'll play the ad, and when we come back, we're going to... Right, I wonder what Bernays would make of this advert. It's the Academic Agency Summer Sale. Use the promo code Scorcher. 25% off all courses. Scorcher. Get it now. Scorcher. 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 Promo code Scorcher. 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 Buy it now. All right. Well, hopefully I've changed your dreams. You really do want a course at the Academic Agency. You need it. Everybody's got one. All the best people in the world have got one. So you want one as well. Pick up a Trivium today. So one of the real insights of Bernays is the use of authority figures, that is doctors, scientists, celebrities. Okay, he basically invented the celebrity endorsement. Okay, what I really needed to do, rather than put together that advert for Scorcher, is I needed to get other really famous people, okay, famous people, to be like, I bought a Trivium, so you want one as well. I don't know if that would work on today's savvy, like, social media audiences, but it's the basic idea. You know, who could I get? Who's hot at the moment? Harry Kane has done the Trivium. You know, David Beckham did the Trivium. I don't know who's famous these days. I don't even know anymore. But you understand, Emma Thompson did the Trivium, whatever. but this is the basic idea of the celebrity endorsement, right? People associate their aspirations, their dreams with celebrities. And Bernays wanted to use that to shift product. The people are highly susceptible to authority figures telling them what to do. Okay, it is a command. And you'll be surprised how much people respond to simply authority and command. You shall do this, and you shall do it now. So that is more effective. Like, imagine, rather than using all of these tricks that Bernays taught them, that firms simply relied on their CEO standing up there, giving a sales pitch. Hello, I'm the CEO of Coca-Cola. We have a fantastic drink, and I think you should buy it. You know, would that shift in, like, that puts you in entirely the wrong frame. You're thinking of the company. You're thinking of corporate executives and money making, and it's all, that's no good at all. You want, you know, an authority figure there, a scientist. We surveyed 100 people, and, you know, 98% of them said, this is the best detergent they've ever seen. And did you know, drinking Yorkshire tea herbal brew or the biscuit brew that I'm drinking gives you fantastic health benefits. You know, this isn't just any tea. It has been clinically proven to be twice as hydrating as the next best tea or whatever. BS, BS, BS. Okay, you've all seen 100,000 adverts. But Bernays was, in a way, teaching them how to do it. He was teaching them all how to do it. If somebody seems independent, if they seem like an expert, if they seem like they have authority, okay, if they are commanding, or if they have some other sort of celebrity and you like them already, okay, this sort of endorsement is potent, and it can help shift whatever it is you're trying to shift. It can help reweave those dreams, because people come in and they're, you know, another side of human nature, in a way, is to get dug in, to be like, you know, right, so you've seen the CEO of Coke, and he's like, well, I don't want to give you my money. I've already kind of made my mind up. I don't like you already. Okay, so people, you get resistant So you don't want to trigger psychological reactants. What you want to trigger is, oh, I already like this person. I really trust scientists. I really like doctors. You know, I trust my doctor here. So if he's telling me this as well, I'll trust him there. You know, it's that basic idea. In pro wrestling, by the way, there's a very simple term for this, and it's called giving someone the rub, right? And again, there's a lot of Bernays in pro wrestling, which is why I've always been fascinated with it. But, you know, if you think about how new wrestlers are introduced often, you know, when I was a kid, it was Hulk Hogan. I mean, he's dead now, but Hulk Hogan was the big hero. He was the fan favorite. Everybody loved him. Well, how did they bring in new good guy wrestlers? Well, Hulk Hogan needs a tag team partner. Here's my friend to the end. It's Brutus Beefcake. Here's my other great friend. It's boop, boop. It's Tugboat. Oh, here's my other great buddy. And now we like Tugboat and we like Beefcake because Hulk Hogan, they're mates with Hogan. And it's that exact same principle, just expanded upwards to, you know, I like David Beckham, so therefore I'm going to buy this perfume or whatever it is. I like, you know, I like Al Pacino, therefore I'm going to buy this watch that's being advertised, whatever it is. Not that Al Pacino ever did any adverts, but you know what I'm saying. Now, I've talked about this already, but the importance of framing reality. Supply the frame first. Give the person the frame with which to view your thing, whatever it is. By feeding ready-made interpretations and expert sources to journalists, PR practitioners shape the overall picture of reality the public receives before any independent analysis begins, okay? And this is more sophisticated than simply celebrity endorsement. For example, Bernays would say, well, look, we've got a problem here. People aren't buying milk anymore. Right, let's say he's gone into the milk company. People aren't buying milk. They've gone to this oat, you know, oat this, oat that. What are we going to do about it? I know. Let's seed several scientific studies. First of all, we put it in a journal, right? We'll see the scientific research paper on the benefits of drinking milk. Stick that in that journal. Then we'll get the science correspondent of the Times and the New York Times and the Independent and the Guardian to run stories on scientists rediscover the benefits of milk. Okay, and that gets people talking about milk in the press. Okay, now we haven't yet revealed our big push for milk. If we can get the government to endorse milk, that would be a really good thing. Okay, then the public has been primed. It's been primed through academia, through the newspapers, through the government. We've told people milk is great. Okay, maybe it'd be good to get a few, let's get Peter Hitchens and a few like conservative influencers talking about how much they love milk. Okay, remember back in the day, I was talking about pro wrestling, Kurt Angle. Okay, he was associated with milk. You know, it's true. He used to drink the milk, you know, pour it over himself. We'll try to get him in. What else do people associate with milk? And then you can see how the frame is already set for the ad campaign, even before the ad campaign has hit. The public is already primed to drink your product, this in this case being milk. Now, this is a hypothetical scenario, but it's the whole, you see, for Bernays, it wasn't just the product. It was the whole deal, the whole package, the entire worldview. Changing reality itself, the entire frame of reality, in order to shift whatever it is that he was contracted to shift. Okay? More powerful than advertising is the continuous interpretation of news and events. Ideally, your frame should be able to deal with all new information that comes in. Okay. And this is more persuasive than direct advertising because it appears objective and it arrives through trusted editorial channels rather than paid placements. So that's the absolute ideal scenario. Everybody's talking about milk. Don't you miss milk? what's all this oat rubbish? Get Peter Hitchens to moan, blah, 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 blah. And here we have it. Okay. Another thing that Binet's really innovated was the use of polling as a weapon. Okay. Now, the idea that a poll would simply reflect what people already think. You can imagine what Binet's thought of that. That's no good. That doesn't give us the answer we want. That doesn't give us the outcome we want. We're in the business of engineering consent. We are the weavers of dreams. So what we'll do is we'll create the polls, and the polls, okay, we'll generate the survey. We'll find the levers to push that out there. We'll have a targeted campaign. And now what we want, our view, will suddenly become public opinion. Now, we've already touched on, you know, nine out of 10 dog breeders recommend this dog food, but also 80% of people in society now say they'd be proud if their son or daughter was a gay or lesbian, as an example. Okay, as an example. Now, I don't know if that statistic is true. I don't know, you know, at some point it definitely wasn't true. But let's pretend a newspaper, every single newspaper, published a story saying that a survey finds that 8 out of 10 parents are now proud to be the parent of, or would be proud to be a parent of, you know, a gay, homosexual son or a lesbian daughter. Let's just pretend this is the stat. Now you can see how, if this statistic is then reproduced and repeated in the media again and again and again and again and again, then the poll, the original poll that you commissioned, okay, has now become kind of a fact. And the public, being passive, being, you know, basically waiting to be fed what they think, will then be susceptible to thinking, oh, well, if 8 out of 10 people, I, you know, this is probably the right thing to think at this point. Okay, this is the socially acceptable thing. What's socially unacceptable is to be prejudiced and bigoted. What we really want is, you know, to embody this. So I tell you what, this is my belief as well. I don't want to be ostracized. I want to be like everybody else. So this is now my view too. Hey, presto. You have manufactured consent through a poll. And, you know, if you think this stuff doesn't still go on, it goes on all the time. Newspapers all the time will say, oh, you know, in France, 7 out of 10 people now believe in green energy. Do they? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. But the fact is, the statistic has power. Regardless of how they arrived at that, the polling itself is a weapon. And it's funny because I mentioned Peter Hitchens. This is something that he's mentioned again and again in his career, that he doesn't trust polling because of its very powerful use in shifting people's opinions in and of itself. And so we have, I should mention, you know, one of the famous campaigns that he ran before we reach the end there. I said I'd mention it, so I've come back to it, is that, you know, he got women to smoke because women were reluctant to smoke at some point, and the tobacco manufacturers wanted to obviously grow their industry more. And so he reframed the cigarette as a liberty stick. Okay, now, if you reject smoking cigarettes, you're not just rejecting, you know, doing that. You're rejecting an entire lifestyle, an entire ethos of freedom, of what it is fundamentally to be American, to be an American woman. Everybody wants to be cool. Smoke a cigarette. Everybody wants to be free. Smoke a cigarette. And again, this is just the basic Binetian method. So this one method, every domain. Binet's applied the same techniques across every area. selling bacon, for example, recruiting soldiers, electing politicians, advancing social causes. His legacy is the multi-billion pound PR, advertising and political consulting industries that exist today. They still shape what we buy, who we vote for, what we believe, what substances we put in our body, what our political beliefs are, whether you're down to things as personal as whether you're proud to have a gay son or not. All of these things are down ultimately to the manufacturing of consent, thanks to the weavers of dreams, ultimately thanks to the insights, whether you like them or not, of Edward Bernays. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You've been a wonderful audience. Very appreciative. Pick up a course at the academic agency, and I will see you tomorrow. Goodbye. If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.